The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Larkin, Judge Johnson, Judge Frisch, the Honorable Michelle A. Larkin presiding.
Thank you. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals this first day of November 2023. The court's calendar this morning is occurring on the Zoom Gov platform. Please be mindful of the timing mechanism that's displayed on the screen and attempts by judges to interrupt you for questions. I note that the court provides an audio recording of the hearings this morning, which will be available online on the Judicial Branch's website in the next day or two. Any recording that is not previously authorized by the court is not permitted. The first case is in the matter of the welfare of the children of NL and BY, file number A23-0931. We are ready for arguments from appellant's counsel. Would appellant's counsel please introduce herself for the record and begin your argument?
Thank you, Your Honor, and good morning. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Brooke Beskow-Warg, and I represent appellant mother N.L. in this appeal of the orders involuntarily terminating her parental rights to her children and denying her motion for a new trial and amended findings. The goal of our child protection system is to rehabilitate and reunify families whenever it's possible. A termination of parental rights is the most severe outcome in these proceedings, and it must be utilized sparingly and only when the county has met its burden of proof and the district court has fully, adequately, and appropriately considered all elements of an involuntary termination of parental rights. In this appeal, Mother challenges two of the three required elements for a termination of parental rights. Specifically, Mother challenges the district court's determination that a statutory ground for termination was met and that the agency made reasonable efforts to rehabilitate Mother and reunify her with her children. Because a statutory ground for termination was not met and because the agency failed to provide reasonable efforts to the family, Mother asked this court to reverse the order terminating her parental rights as to her children. First, as to the statutory grounds, it's well established under Minnesota case law that when considering whether statutory grounds for termination are met, the district court is required to consider the conditions existing at the time of the termination. In this case, the district court's significant reliance on Mother's past history and the disregard of Mother's substantial case plan compliance and progress was an error warranting reversal of the termination of parental rights. At the time of the termination trial in this matter, Mother was in compliance with her case plan, and she had made substantial progress. The record shows that at the time of the trial, Mother had been sober for approximately 4.5 months. She was engaged with programming at the Healing House that she had been attending for that duration of time, and she was engaged in a licensed chemical dependency treatment program once she found out that the Healing House was not an adequate solution to her chemical dependency issues.
Counsel, could you refresh my recollection of the record? How long had the case been open and child protection between the case opening and the TPR? So I'm trying to get a sense of where the context of that 4.5 months of case plan participation.
Sure. So the case opened in approximately April of 2022. I believe it was April 12th when the EPC hearing occurred. At the time of trial, which began, I believe, also on April 12th of 2023, the children had been an out-of-home placement then for about a year. Generally, and I appreciate the question, Your Honor, because the timelines are really significant in this case. Generally, a petition, a permanency petition, does not need to be filed until the children have been in out-of-home placement for 11 months. The admit-deny hearing needs to occur by the 12-month mark, and the TPR trial or permanency trial is supposed to occur within 60 days of that admit-deny hearing. Here, we were within the timelines, and despite the district court making a finding, or excuse me, asking the agency to file a permanency petition at approximately the 6-month mark, We are still within that overall timeline under Minnesota law. And so I believe that is significant in this case because had mother been given more time to work her case plan, to continue on with her treatment and the other case plan goals, she surely would have been in a position where this termination should not have happened. Mother, yes, Your Honor.
Did she move the court for an extension of the timeline so she could have more time to work her case plan?
I do not believe that is in the record, Your Honor. But that does not negate the district court's obligation to consider the conditions as they exist at the time of the trial. And in this case, as noted, mother had been sober for approximately 4.5 months at the time of the trial. She had also been attending individual therapy for about 6.5 months. And her therapist reported that she was doing really well and making progress in that therapy. She was also engaged in group therapy at the Healing House, and she was engaging in parenting classes and had already completed a 10-week program at the Healing House. Another obligation of her case plan was to have safe and suitable housing for her children. Mother found that at the Healing House, which would provide that safe, stable, and chemical-free living environment for her children, where she would be able to live with them for up to, I believe, 2 years following her completion of the program. And so she really had attained many of the goals within her case plan or was nearly or very close to finishing others. Yes, Your Honor.
Had she had prior involvement in child protection proceedings?
Your Honor, I believe there may have been, and my memory on this is a little bit fuzzy. I believe she does have 4 older children who are with their father. I do not recall specifically. There may have been a report to child protection, but I believe that ended up being a voluntary decision between family members for her children to live with her father, or with their father, excuse me, her other children.
I have a question about Healing House. Am I correct that she was still together with the children's father, and would he be allowed to live at Healing House?
Your Honor, I don't believe at the time of trial she was with the children's father. My understanding from the record is that the father was in prison at the time of the trial, and he voluntarily terminated his parental rights. So under those circumstances, I don't believe it would have been appropriate, especially given the voluntary termination of parental rights for father to live at the Healing House had he not been in prison. But my understanding is that he was at the time of trial. Yes, Your Honor.
What does the record show about mother's family support system?
Mother does have some family support. I know that there were relatives who were interested in being placement options for the children. The record also shows that mother wanted to move to the Twin Cities area where more of her family members lived. In the area that she was living when the child protection proceedings started, she did not have the same family support, but she would have, and she intended later to move to the Twin Cities in order to engage with that support and be near family members. I believe that's all the record shows about her family support. But she did. It does sound like she did have family support, just in a different area.
Your argument that the district court must base determination on evidence as it exists at the time of trial, that could apply in different ways to the 4 different statutory grounds that were found by the district court. Could you focus on the statutory ground of failure to correct the conditions that led to out-of-home placement? I mean, I think that factor, or that statutory ground by its nature, is focused on the time of trial. But would you mind reviewing the factors that led to, conditions that led to out-of-home placement, and then, and then focus on that particular statutory ground?
Sure. So my understanding of the conditions that led to the out-of-home placement, it stemmed from this raid on the parents' home in which there were weapons and substances found within the home. And so my understanding is that the primary concern at the time of removal was the chemical dependency of the parents and the unsafe living conditions in the home. And mother was obligated to, under the case plan, to address those issues. At the time of trial, mother was addressing the issue of chemical dependency. She had been in the healing house. She was remaining sober, and she had found a licensed chemical dependency treatment program when she learned that the healing house was not going to be adequate. As to the living conditions of the home, of course, all the weapons and the chemicals were removed at the time of the raid. Father was no longer living there. He was in prison at the time of the trial, and mother had made efforts to remediate the issues in the home. She had also made efforts to find another safe and suitable living situation for her children, which she found in the healing house. And so, given the issues that were present at the time of removal, mother really had made substantial progress in remediating those issues.
No, you said efforts to remediate, but I thought that there was evidence and findings that the home had not been cleaned to the extent necessary to remove residue of methamphetamine and things like that.
Your Honor, the court did find that. It's somewhat unclear how the court came to that conclusion, given the evidence that was presented at trial. Specifically, mother did testify that she made efforts to clean, to do what she needed to in order to remediate those issues. The county repeatedly testified that mother did not adequately clean the home. However, on cross-examination, they testified also that they never actually went out to address or to check or inspect the home. And so it's really unclear how the district court came to the conclusion that the issues in the home had not been remediated at the time of the trial. Even if they had not, as I'd mentioned before, the mother had found a safe and suitable living environment for her children at the healing house.
Which is temporary, right? How do we analyze that? I mean, if someone has found an arrangement, you know, it's in a group setting, she's not providing it. She's a guest in a sense, or she's been allowed to live there and for only a finite period of time. How do we, is that sufficient? In other words, leaving open the question about what she would do after her 2 year stay there.
Sure. I believe that it is sufficient in looking at the conditions as they exist at the time of trial. She had obtained safe and suitable housing for her children. Yes, that housing would end at a given point, but there's no telling. I mean, mother presumably could have found other safe and suitable housing. She did say that she was going to be working on that, and she did say that she would be looking in the Twin Cities area where she did have family support. Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, what does the record show in terms of mother's visitation, or lack thereof, around the time of trial?
Yes, Your Honor. At the time of trial, mother was not allowed visitation. The order suspending that visitation occurred in approximately September, I believe, of 2022. There had been one, I believe, virtual visit, and then one visit that was actually part of the parenting capacity assessment in that time frame. And so the visitation really was not allowed. Yes, Your Honor.
And it was not allowed because court suspected she was using, or she wasn't consistent.
So at the time the court suspended the visitation, it was due to a few no-shows for visits, as well as showing up late for visits. And so I believe that there were issues with maintaining visitation, because a lot of the centers will cancel or they'll suspend visitation after so many no-shows or late shows.
And you're saying that the record shows that at the time of trial in April, she had documented sobriety for 4.5 months. Was she providing UAs from January through to trial and they were all clean?
She was providing UAs to the healing house. And the record shows that beginning November, I believe 28th or 30th, that her UAs were clean for all substances. She did have a positive UA when she entered the healing house, that was positive for alcohol, not for methamphetamine, which was the ongoing issue that the county was concerned about. But thereafter, she did submit negative UAs up until the time of trial and through the time of trial. Yes, Your Honor.
Oh, my apologies.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry, I just lost my place here. I would also direct the court to page 39 of the court's order, which I think is really shows how the district court analyzed this case. The district court wrote that mother conceded at trial that she was non-compliant with the case plan during large portions of the case and seems to have had a change of heart immediately before the termination trial. This change of heart is too little too late, especially considering mother's irregular compliance with the case plan over the length of the case. The statement is really revealing, and I think it's troubling because it shows how the court approached and analyzed this, which is not about whether the conditions at the time of the trial were remediated. I see my time is just about up, so I will answer any further questions on rebuttal. Thank you.
One more follow-up, if I may, Judge Larkin.
Sure. Of course.
With returning again to the failure to correct conditions statutory ground, are there only two conditions that are relevant to that analysis? The two that you mentioned, the chemical dependency and weapons. I mean, in your brief, you talk about other conditions, in the context of how they existed at the time of trial, including mental health, including home remediation. I think we referred to that. That's perhaps that's the housing issue, and separately from her chemical dependency issues, parenting, education, visitation, or parenting component. Do we analyze all of those conditions? Do we have to consider the evidence at the time of trial with respect to all of those conditions for the statutory ground of failure to correct conditions?
Your Honor, I believe that we have to look primarily at whether these children can safely return home within the foreseeable future. The primary concerns in this case were the condition of the home and also mother's use of methamphetamine. There were, of course, other case plan tasks that mother needed to complete in order to adequately parent the children. As noted, even if we do consider these other case plan components, mother had made substantial progress with those case plan components. And I believe that needs to be considered in the analysis as well.
Sounds like you're saying that for that statutory ground, we would limit our analysis to only those two that you mentioned. Am I understanding your answer?
I think we need to primarily focus on what the conditions are that need to be remediated in order to allow the children to return home.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We are now ready for arguments on behalf of respondent Redwood County. Would you introduce yourself for the record, counsel, and begin your argument?
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Travis Smith. I'm a special assistant Redwood County attorney, and I represent the respondent Southwest Health and Human Services in this appeal. At the time of the TPR trial in this case, appellant's children had been placed out of her home for a year, and the agency had been making efforts to work voluntarily with the mother since late July or August of 2021. It's only after those efforts to work voluntarily with the mother failed that the agency filed a CHIPS petition in March of 2022 and proceeded to involve the court. Appellant had spent most of the year when the children were placed out of her home continuing to use methamphetamine, failing to meaningfully address her chemical dependency problem, and doing little to nothing to develop the skills her children desperately needed her to have so she could meet their needs and they could return home. Yes, Judge Larkin.
Counsel, what does the record show regarding the needs of the children and how they were doing in placement at the time of trial?
Thank you for that question. The record shows that the children had significant special needs, and that they were doing fairly well in in foster care placement, and that when they had contact, even brief contact, either virtually or during the parenting capacity assessment in person, they immediately started to regress and exhibit behaviors they had not been exhibiting when they were out of the appellant's care. Specifically, the record shows that one of the children had an unspecified trauma and stressor-related disorder. Another had a disruptive mood dysregulation disorder. Another had another specified trauma and stressor-related disorder. And after being placed in foster care, the children began receiving the mental health care they needed, and which appellant wasn't providing. The parenting
counsel, can you just clarify the record for me? Is it the case that mother had no contact with the children during the 4 months of sobriety immediately preceding the TPR trial? So there was no ability to assess the children's interaction with mother during her period of sobriety. Is that fair?
The contact was limited, I believe, to one virtual visit in January, and then the short visit during the parenting capacity assessment in February, just 6 weeks prior to the trial. And I think it's noteworthy that after that brief in-person visit, the children regressed. They started exhibiting violent behaviors. One of the children wet his pants on the way back, on the way home from that visit, despite having used the bathroom immediately before leaving the office where that visit occurred. The parenting capacity assessor during that visit noted that there was little attachment between the children and the appellant, that some of the children were more comfortable approaching the assessor after the visit. And based on her observations, the parenting capacity assessor concluded and testified, and the district court credited this testimony, that at the time of trial, the appellant had no ability to provide the children with the care they needed to address their special needs. And I think that's telling. We have an experienced parenting capacity assessor who the district court completely credited her testimony and report. And she had an opportunity to observe the interaction between appellant and the children and made these conclusions and offered this expert opinion that there was no way that at the time of trial, the children could be returned to appellant's care, that despite having completed this parenting education course, she had no ability to apply the skills she had learned to her interactions with the children, even in a structured environment. And I think that demonstrates powerfully that the conditions that led to the out-of-home placement of the children had not been corrected by the time of trial and is a significant consideration and, quite frankly, supports the district court's conclusion that the statutory bases here were proved, particularly the failure to correct the conditions. Parenting education was one of the needs that was identified in the case plan. It was one of the things that had to be addressed. Although she had completed some education, she had a complete inability to apply that, what she had learned, to the concrete interactions with her children and failed to do so. She engaged in inappropriate behaviors both during the virtual visit and the brief in-person visit in a structured environment. To suggest that the children could have been returned to her care at the time of trial completely defies the record. And certainly the record here demonstrates that the district court did not abuse its discretion or clearly err when it made the findings here that support the bases for termination.
Counsel, are the children placed together? Are they placed in a relative home? Are they placed in a pre-adoptive home?
At the time of trial, it's my understanding they were placed together in foster care. I want to briefly touch on the question of home remediation because there was some fairly extensive conversation about that. The reality is that the appellant failed to follow through with the remediation plan. Yes, she said she did some cleaning, some washing, but the inspection and the testing also recommended a cleaning of the furnace and the ductwork and that sort of thing. The social workers coordinated that inspection. one of the social workers who was the caseworker at the time continued to stay in contact with the agency that conducted the inspection, and also tried to schedule and set up a meeting to talk with the appellant, to talk with the consultant, to put a cleanup plan in place. The agency scheduled that meeting a couple of times in May, four times in May, and the appellant didn't attend any of those meetings, continued to request rescheduling, and effectively never cooperated with the agency's efforts to help follow through with that plan. In fact, the appellant testified at trial that she saw no point in cleaning up the house and remediating the methamphetamine contamination, because she planned to sell the house and move to the cities and had no intention to return there with the children.
Mr. Smith, what's your argument in response to appellant's argument about the Healing House as an alternative home?
I think it was a theoretical alternative home. Certainly their rules would allow at an appropriate time for the appellant to live there with her children. But that was only theoretically the case. There was no present ability for the appellant to live there with her children, because she couldn't handle it. I would also point out that although there was some demonstrated sobriety within a structured context, appellant has no demonstrated period of sobriety outside of a structured setting during the pendency of this case. All of the sobriety occurred after she moved into the structured living situation at Healing House. Obviously, she could temporarily live there at some point in time during the program with the children if she was making sufficient progress. But we weren't at that point at the time of trial. And I think that's an important consideration when looking at whether she had secured housing. And as Your Honor pointed out in your earlier questioning, that is just a temporary solution. At the point of trial, appellant had no permanent housing solution for her children. She had not adequately remediated the contamination in the house in Walnut Grove, and in fact indicated that she had no intention to return there with the children, intended to sell that house, hadn't made progress on selling that house and obtaining a new house that she could live in the cities, which was apparently her plan. And so I think it's tenuous at best to suggest that she had a concrete plan for housing for her children if they were returned to her care. And again, to the extent that there's conflicting aspects in the record about what the housing was, those are for the district court to resolve. And it's for the district court to determine based on the evidence and weigh it, whether the evidence demonstrates that there is an adequate plan for housing. The district court here considered all of that evidence and concluded that there wasn't a plan to adequately provide housing for the children. So I think that's important to remember here too. This is an abuse of discretion standard of review. Those findings of fact aren't clearly erroneous. There's facts in the record that support the district court's findings. Just because appellant would like the court to have given more weight to other evidence doesn't mean it was required to do so.
Do you agree that appellant was sober for 4.5 months before trial? I seem to remember some argument in your brief that disagreed with the appellant's arguments about that issue.
I agree that there had been, more or less, to the extent that there was some argument in my brief that suggested to the contrary, I didn't intend it to do so.
I may have misread it or misunderstood it.
It's possible I wasn't clear. That's always a possibility. I think the record is clear that the last positive test was at the end of November, before she entered the Healing House structured living scenario, and that while she was living in that facility, there was no positive tests. I believe the record is clear on that point. Yes.
Does the record indicate whether giving mother additional time to participate and her case planning services would have been detrimental to the children?
I think the record does indicate that. The two of the children are very young. If it were just two of the children, the presumption would apply at 6 months rather than the longer term. The parenting capacity assessor assessed that there was no likelihood in the reasonably foreseeable future that the appellant would develop the skills she needed to address the children's needs and to adequately parent the children. I think the assessor's testimony about the lack of attachment with some of the younger children to the mother also speaks highly of the fact that it would be detrimental to the children to continue a non-permanent situation. The children needed permanency. These small children especially needed to be able to be in a stable, long-term, permanent house where they could form appropriate attachments to their caregivers. And appellant simply was not able to provide that at the time of trial or in the reasonably foreseeable future.
I have a question with respect to, again, the statutory ground of failure to correct conditions. In your brief, you acknowledge two of the conditions were her mental health condition and the need for parenting education. What was the state of the evidence of those factors and conditions at the time of trial?
So her mental health situation, I think there is evidence, as counsel pointed out, that she was getting counseling and was doing fairly well in the counseling. But I think what's telling is that as that relates to the ability to care for her children, there was some sort of disconnect in dealing with her own mental health issues and applying that in a way that allowed her to adequately parent the children. Even if she was making some progress, for example, the record demonstrates there's a lack of ability, a lack of insight into her own role in causing the harm to the children or allowing the children to be in an environment which caused them to experience this trauma. That failure to take responsibility demonstrates that there was still more work to be done in the realm of mental health, especially as it applies to parenting the children. With regard to parenting education, I think, as I indicated earlier, there was evidence that she had received some parenting education, but there's also substantial evidence that she was unable, when she had even brief opportunities to interact with her children in the months prior to trial, while she was receiving or had received that parenting education, to apply what she had learned in a way that allowed her to appropriately parent the children. And in light of that evidence, again, which the district court credited, including the testimony of both the guardian ad litem and the parenting capacity assessor, the district court didn't abuse its discretion when it found that condition had not been corrected at the time of trial. I see that my time has almost expired. If there are no other questions, I would simply ask this court to affirm. Thank you.
I don't see any other questions. Thank you for your argument. We'll now hear rebuttal argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to address a few points that Mr. Smith made during his argument. First, the point of the voluntary efforts for mother before the case was actually opened as CHIPS. I believe this is once again an inappropriate focus on past history rather than what was actually occurring at the time of trial. And it's really not relevant to the analysis. The case had not been opened. These services were voluntary at that point in time. I would also like to address the parenting capacity assessment. It really appears that the district court didn't rely much, if at all, on the parenting assessment in its evaluation of the statutory grounds for termination. Certainly, it considered that with the best interests of the child, but the best interests alone is not sufficient for a termination of parental rights. We also need a statutory ground. It's also important to note that the assessor said that one of the purposes of the assessment was to evaluate the strengths and weaknesses of the parent, evaluate their relationship with the children, and make recommendations to improve the parent and child relationship. But that assessment was not requested or ordered until February of 2023, only a short time before the trial in this matter. The report did not come out until I believe, mid to end of March, giving mother approximately 1 month, if not less, to actually work on any recommendations from that parenting assessor. That, coupled with the fact that she was not allowed visitation with her children and was not allowed to actually demonstrate her progress and the things that she had learned, is a concern in this case. I'd also like to address
Ms. Warg, are you suggesting that those facts go to the issue of reasonable efforts, or are they relevant to some other legal issue?
I believe it does go to, and just to clarify, Your Honor, you mean the timing of the assessment? I believe you're on mute, Your Honor.
Sorry. Yes, the timing of the assessment, the short time between the report and trial. Yes, that issue.
I do believe it does go to reasonable efforts. As noted in my brief, from the time that mother really started making efforts for change, which was about August, September of 2022, that's when reasonable efforts by the agency really fell off. They were not making real reasonable efforts. They were not offering genuine assistance to mother when she had decided that she really wanted to make a change. When she said, hey, I want a treatment option where I can have my children. I'm looking for housing resources. That's when the agency really dropped the ball and did not continue to assist her in those efforts. So yes, I absolutely think that the timing of the parenting capacity assessment goes to a lack of reasonable efforts. I'd also like to address the foster placement for the children. They were in a non-relative foster home. It does not appear that relatives were really thoroughly explored in the earlier portions of the case. And I think it's notable and concerning that these children are not in a culturally appropriate home. My understanding from the record is that this is a Hmong family and that these children were placed with white caregivers who did not have an understanding of their cultural needs, including, you know, food. Mother had to help the caregiver with helping her with recipes and how to make food for the children that the children would actually eat. So it was not an appropriate home for those children. I would also like to address Mr. Smith's note about inability of the children to return at the time of trial. Even if that is the case, the court had ongoing jurisdiction over the matter and could have made other arrangements such as a CHIPS proceeding, could have done protective supervision or a trial home visit that would be short of a termination of parental rights. In close, Your Honor, I would quote from Your Honor Judge Larkin's TRT opinion, a recent unreported decision on this same issue, in which you wrote, ignoring favorable steps to a parent that a parent has taken to correct conditions of neglect in a pending child protection proceeding seems punitive. That was the case here. The district court disregarded the progress of mother, which is not the proper analysis, and for those reasons, we ask this court to reverse the termination of parental rights order and remand to the district court for further proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you to both parties for your arguments and briefing. The matter is submitted. You'll have a decision from the court within the expedited timeframe provided by our rules.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.